Hi, guys. My name is Kristen. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Patrick, thank you for being my 10-minute speaker, even though you have more clean time than I do. My sobriety date is March 18th, 2021, so I just celebrated my 10 months. I have a sponsor, Rachel, and I raised my hand to sponsor other women, but I have not had a sponsee yet, so I'm looking forward to that process when it comes along. So I guess I'll start with childhood. I was definitely a weird kid. Like, I never felt like I fit in anywhere. I had like all different groups of friends. Some of them were younger than me, some of them were older than me, and like I always wanted to be friends with the cool kids, but like it never happened for me. I was so weird. Like, I went through the braces phase, then I had scoliosis, so I had to wear a back brace, like all the like the weirdest things you can imagine, and like it was just all working against me. And even I have one sibling, and like we didn't even get along. Like, she bullied me. She was probably like the biggest bully in my childhood. So like I just couldn't find my place, and like I didn't find my groove for a while, probably until I started drinking. But with that being said, I grew up in New York, born and raised in the Bronx, and my mom worked a lot. She was an emergency room nurse, so she was gone usually overnights, so she could be there like in the morning and for school pickup and that type of stuff. But my sister and I realized pretty early on that my dad had a problem. He was in construction for his brother's company, and there were always issues with him at work that we would like hear my mom talking about and my uncle. And if he was home, he was asleep on the couch with a beer next to him. And it was apparent, like we knew. And eventually when I got into like my teens, we did the whole like dropped out off at rehab and hope he's gonna get better. And he comes out and he'll put together 30 days or 60 days. I think one time we went to an AA meeting and we watched him pick up his 90-day chip. And like, I remember the feeling I felt like sitting in the back of the meeting, because I was so proud of him, but I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, I knew in the back of my head it wasn't gonna last, because we had sent him to rehab countless amounts of times, and I was just, it was this like bittersweet feeling, because I knew it wasn't gonna last much longer. So my parents went on to divorce when I was getting ready to go to college, and my dad deteriorated pretty quickly. I made a decision at some point to stop speaking to him. It was just, every time I was with him, he was either embarrassing us or putting us in danger. He like left my grandma at like a restaurant one time by accident. He like lit a cigarette at the table in a restaurant where like you weren't supposed to smoke. And it was just like constant. And it was upsetting and it was embarrassing. And I was like, I was at the point where I was old enough where I was like, it's gonna be better for me to cut it now than to watch it, see what, you know, what's gonna happen. It was just, I didn't see it going anywhere good. So I got the call that my dad was in the ER. This was 2 years after I stopped talking to him. And they said he was really confused and they weren't sure what was wrong. And I looked at my boyfriend at the time and I was like, my dad's dying. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, he's just confused. And I said, I don't know. I didn't know what it was. I don't know if it was like a God moment or like whatever you want to call it. But I said, I need to go to the ER now. And my dad had sepsis. His liver had stopped functioning and his blood was toxic. And he was in the ICU the next day. And 2 days later, he passed. And when my dad passed away, I was the only person in the room with him. And I had time to tell him all the things that I wanted to get off my chest. He couldn't talk anymore, but I told him that I forgave him, and like I understood that what he was doing, he couldn't stop doing, and I was old enough to like comprehend what was going on. And I feel like I had as much closure as I was going to get. Like, I was at peace with it when my dad passed away. This was in 2011, but I kind of said to myself, I don't ever want to be like him. Like, I'm never going to do that. It's not going to be me. I'm the epitome of my father, just so you all know. Like, I have done almost every single thing my father has done, and like the whole time saying like, but I'm not gonna, like the ifs or like the yets, like, but I'm not gonna do that thing he did. No, I've done them all. And you know, it all got me to where I'm at, right? So like, I'm just glad that I can sit here and I can make a change and try and help another alcoholic, unlike my father, who wasn't, you know, that lucky. But when he passed away in 2011, I was in college and I had finally gotten out of the house, and my mom had been like really, really, just so controlling. Like, we weren't allowed to go out. We didn't, like, we had a curfew. We didn't party. Like, I didn't drink in high school. I was like a nationally ranked swimmer in high school. So I was swimming competitively and my mom was traveling with me and I didn't have a social life. Like, swimming was my life. I woke up at 4:30 in the morning. I went to practice. I went to school. Then I practiced again. So it was like eat, sleep, swim all the time. So when I got to college, I was like, I'm done with swimming. I'm worn out. I'm over it. And it was party time. Like, the first time I drank, I was like, I was in my lane. I was like, this is like the way that I'm meant to feel. Like, everyone loves me. I'm hysterical. I'm popular. The guys were flirting with me. I had never had a boyfriend. Like, I was just like ready. I was like, this is it. And college didn't go well for me. Like, they almost kicked me out numerous times. I was on behavior contracts and this, that, and taking alcohol classes. And, you know, I had my car at school and I was drinking and driving. I got my first DUI a couple days after my 21st birthday. But, like, none of it slowed me down. None of it. I was in the zone and I was having the time of my life. And, like, I had dreams and aspirations. I wanted to be a teacher and I knew I was great at working with children, but I was like, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be, you know. So I graduated college, like, by the skin of my teeth with, like, a C-minus average. I don't even know. But there was, like, a brief period after college when I, like, kind of got my shit together. I had to move back home, so, like, I had to kind of taper back the drinking a little bit because I was living with my mom, and I definitely couldn't drink and drive because I was living with my mom. So, like, it slowed down briefly, and I went immediately to get my master's degree because I was still pursuing teaching, and I really did want to do it. But, you know, that period didn't last long. I got through my master's program and graduated. I started substitute teaching. And it's hard in New York to become a full-time teacher up in the suburbs. They want you to go down to the city schools first. And I was like, that's not for me. Like, I'm not a city school teacher. I belong in Westchester County. So I was substituting, and everyone loved me, and the principals loved me, but there were no jobs, and I was not going to get a job doing that. So after a couple years, I was like, you know what, like, maybe this isn't meant to be. Like, maybe I'm just not meant to be a teacher. It's just not working out for me, you know? So I turned back to my drinking and my partying and my, you know, anything to, like, get my mind off of, like, what I really wanted to happen in my life wasn't happening. So, like, I needed a distraction, and I didn't know what was next for me. Like, I didn't know how I was going to make the teaching thing happen. And I didn't know if I didn't teach, like, what was going to define me. So it was partying. Like, it was being the life of the party constantly. I went and got a studio apartment, and it was party time all the time. Like, I didn't do holidays with my family. I had holidays with my friends. It was constant. And I held on to the substitute teaching to pay the bills, but it got to the point where, like, I was using at school. Like, I was using in the bathroom. Like, I was drinking on my lunch break. And, like, thank God I never got caught, but, like, the things I was doing, like, you know, clearly I could have gotten myself in a lot of trouble. I was stealing class trip money to, like, get drugs and alcohol. Like, it was bad. It was bad. It was not good. It was bad. It was really bad. Like, and I, like, you know, like, Susie would bring in, like, $20 for, like, the trip to the zoo next week. And, like, I wouldn't leave a note to her teacher that Susie brought the zoo money. I just put it in my pocket. So, like, and then teachers started asking, like, you know, so-and-so's mom said she brought da-da-da. I don't know. No, we didn't get any money that day. I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, like I said, it was bad. It was not good. But eventually, I got into a really bad car accident. It was probably like 2014. And I was in a rental car because my car, I crashed drinking and driving, but it was just a fender bender. So I'm driving the rental and, you know, I'm sure a lot of you know how it goes. Like, I blacked out, I don't remember anything, and I woke up in a hospital bed. And my mom was there, and I just remember waking up and, like, looking at my body, and literally, like, my entire body was black and blue, like, head to toe. My leg had this crazy, like, bandage slash contraption. My arm was in a cast. I was in a back brace, and, like, I didn't know what happened. And, you know, my mom looked at me, and she was like, Kristen, like, what are you doing with your life? Like, you almost died. And I was like, the first thing out of my mouth was, but I wasn't drinking. And she's like, first of all, like, that's not even the point. But, like, second of all, like, are you really going to sit here and lie to me about what's really going on? And, you know, at the end of the day, for some reason, the blood alcohol on paper was 0.0. But, like, this is when my mom knew, like, the gig was up. Like, something was really going on and it wasn't good. And I really didn't care. I was like, you know, this is kind of cool. They'll probably give me some good meds. You know, I'll just milk it and, you know, play the victim card and the sympathy card and ride it out. So things just kept going downhill. I had a broken femur. I was in a wheelchair for 3 months, and I deteriorated fast. I met some Peruvian guy, and he didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Spanish, but I was going to teach him the language, and we were going to tutor each other, and, like, we wound up getting married. I later find out that he was just trying to get his green card, but I thought it was love. But this is, like, really my life, and, like, I think this is all normal. Like, this is, you know, I'm living out this fairy tale that, like, women would dream to have. So we get divorced after 6 months. And I'm spiraling. Like, if that didn't sound like spiraling, like, it gets worse. Like, you know, the eviction notice comes, the car gets repossessed, the husband and I divorce, he wound up putting his hands on me. And the day the eviction notice came, I knew this was, like, the end. I was exhausted and I didn't want to do it anymore. And I, at that point, I didn't really have, like, a choice. It was either, like, I'm on the streets or, like, I'm gonna finally go get some help for myself and see if I can, like, stop. So I went to my first treatment program in upstate New York. It was very religious. It was women only. It was up in the mountains in the middle of winter. And it was, like, it was 50 women. And I don't know. I think I got medically discharged because I was, like, faking some kind of sickness. Like, they just didn't know what to do with me. Like, I didn't want to be there. I think I, like, really just didn't know what to do with myself at that point. And I was like, let's give it a go. And it wasn't happening for me. I think I lasted, like, four out of the 6 months. And then I flew down to Florida to be near my mom because I was like, if I move back near my mom is, like, the only thing that, like, she's instilled enough fear in me that, like, when she's around, like, I can somewhat keep it together for a little while, you know? So I was like, let me go down to Florida and be near my mom and try and stay clean. And what, like, the next 3 years looked like was stay clean for 5 or 6 months, go back out, relapse, hit what I think is rock bottom, go back to treatment, and then I literally did that probably 5 times, just over and over, and the lows got lower and lower. And I didn't know if I was ever going to stop. At some point, I just was like, you know, I'm probably going to die, and, like, this is the way my life is going to be, and I'm going to be just like my dad. And, you know, some people just don't get the chance to, they just, some people can't, and I might be that person. So I found out about, gosh, a year and a half ago that I was pregnant. And I was on the streets in Tampa, homeless, in an abusive relationship. I had been to jail, I think, already twice that year. I caught 2 Grand Theft Auto charges. My mom put out a Marchman Act on me, so I had a warrant out for my arrest. And I'm 35 years old, so, like, the opportunity to have a kid was something that I didn't know if I was going to see again. And because of my history working with children, I knew I'd be a great mother, and I knew it was something that I wanted for myself. So, you know, I kind of made this decision that, like, if I'm going to ever do this, it's got to be now, and it's got to be, like, I got to go all in the recovery thing. Like, I had done AA, and I loved it, but, like, there was just kind of, like, always some piece missing. Like, I was in the program, but, like, I had a shitty boyfriend that I shouldn't have been dating, or, like, I was in the program, but, like, I wasn't working the steps or calling my sponsor. Like, I never had all the stars kind of align and do, like, all the things. And I got clean when I found out I was pregnant, and I wound up in jail. Like I said, I had a warrant for a Marchman Act. And I was pregnant in jail, and I thought, like, that I was done. It was literally the most painful 3 months of, like, my entire life. I was alone in a cell for 23 out of 24 hours a day because this was during COVID, and I was quarantined because I was pregnant. So I literally got 1 hour out of my cell a day to take a shower and make a phone call. And this went on for 3 months. And this was like a really, really, really dark time for me. My depression was completely unmanageable. I was in a jail, so I wasn't getting like real attention to like my psych needs at the time. And I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And they let me out and released me to DACO. And I don't know, I really, really thought that was it. They set me up in a program where they were gonna get me an apartment for me and my daughter. They were gonna buy me all the things that I needed. I had a lot of support because I was a single mom. There were a lot of programs available to me. And I can't really tell you why. I don't really know. To this day, like, I can't pinpoint what took me back out, but I relapsed in my 7th month of my pregnancy, and it was not part of my plan. There was really no, like, it just happened. I literally just one day was like, fuck this. I'm tired of being under, like, constant rules and regulation, this DOC-run treatment program after being in jail. I was like, I just can't do this anymore. I'm just gonna leave, but, like, I'm gonna stay clean. I just can't do this treatment thing anymore. And I went back out, and it was very short-lived. The relapse was brief. But again, I had a warrant because I was still not compliant with the Marchman Act. The Marchman Act says that you have to complete the treatment plan through to the end. That includes outpatient, that includes whatever is recommended, and I was not compliant. So I found myself in jail again, and now I'm 8 months pregnant, and I don't know if I'm gonna get out in time to give birth to my daughter. So they had to discuss with me what birth looks like when you're in jail, what happens to your kid if you go into labor when you're in jail. And I was at that point just preparing for the worst. Like, I really just thought, like, I'm not gonna get to have this dream of, like, being an amazing mom. My kid's gonna get taken from me, and it's no one's fault but my own because I couldn't stop. And, you know, once this is all said and done and they let me out, like, I'm pretty much just gonna kill myself because I'm not gonna be able to live with the fact that I have my own kid taken from me. You know, so it was a really, really dark time for me. And somehow I got a release date. And again, they released me to treatment. And this was like weeks before I was due to give birth. I got into Tampa Crossroads, and they told me I was gonna be able to have my daughter there with me. And, you know, there was like a spark of, like, you know, hope and joy and excitement. And I had put together a little bit of clean time again. And I kind of like started making a plan again for the baby coming. And I went into labor 2 weeks early. It was April 21st. Of last year, and her father was incarcerated. He's in prison right now. And I gave birth to her, and when I saw my daughter's face for the first time, it felt like anything that I had done in my past, like all of the horrible shit that I had done, like I felt like the slate was wiped clean. I felt like she doesn't know anything that I've done, and she doesn't know what I used to be, but, like, I can start right now, and I can become a completely different person, and she'll never, ever have to know the old me. And she was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And on my second day in the hospital, I was breastfeeding, and a woman came in a uniform, and she wanted to ask me some questions. And, you know, I was, like, already working my program of recovery, so, like, I literally didn't know anything else to do but be honest. And, like, I literally just, I think, like, I don't know if I was still on drugs from giving birth or, like, if I was in it, I don't know, but this woman comes in and it's DCF, and I tell her everything. And she's really there because there was abuse during my pregnancy with my daughter's father and I. But I start telling her that I relapsed when I was pregnant. And, like, I'm just, like, spewing out, like, diarrhea of the mouth. And the nurse comes in a couple of minutes after this conversation with this lady, and they take my baby. And I had no idea any of this was going to happen. I thought I was clean. I thought I was in the clear. I thought I was doing the right thing. And, like, I was completely... I don't even know what the words are. Like, my world, again, felt like it was falling apart. And I felt like in that moment I had, like, two options. And, like, one was to run out the door and go get drunk. Or my other one was to enthrall myself in this program and give everything I had to treatment and get my kid back and fight for my kid. Because I knew just because she was getting taken from me temporarily, this wasn't a forever thing. And I know women in the program who have worked to reunify with their kids. And I know it's possible. And that's been my drive to get clean. I've been working a case plan to get my kid back. And she's literally the most amazing human being like I've ever... She's a joy. Like, she's always happy. She is funny, and she's crawling, and she's starting to walk and pull up and say things, and, like, she laughs, and she when I'm around her, nothing else matters. And I'm really, really close to getting my kid back. I just got granted, I see her 3 days a week for 7 hours. I take her to the zoo and the mall and the library, and, you know, we do all the things. And when I'm with her, it just feels like a normal mom and their kid, like, having fun. I don't think about, like, all the other crap that's going on with the court and the felony probation and the, you know, it's just a mom and, like, her daughter enjoying their time together. And I'm really close to getting her back. I'm just waiting for them to come to my residence and do the home study, and then I get her for overnights. It's, like, probably another 2 months. Sorry, I kind of just lost all train of thought when I got to, like, the home stretch here of this. But, you know, this time just feels different. And I know a lot of times people say that, and it's so cliche, but, like, I have a lot to lose this time, and I'm not willing to lose it. I'm not willing to see what another rock bottom would look like. I have more drive than I've ever had to stay clean. And, you know, I go to my meetings, I work with women in the program that I adore, that I can tell anything to, that I trust. I work the steps, I do all the things, and I have to constantly remind myself that when life feels monotonous, like, that's the way kind of it's supposed to feel. Because I tend to get that itch where, like, it's the wake up, and it's the go to work, and it's the come home, and it's the, you know, whatever. I nanny, so it's help the kids with homework, make them their dinner, put them to bed. I'm exhausted, and now I have to do it again tomorrow, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. And, like, it just feels like there's no end in sight, and it's not fun. But, like, when I get in that groove and I convince myself that, like, monotony is not fun and, like, I'm sick of it and I'm bored, like, that's when I go back out. So I have to remind myself that, like, that schedule and that routine for me is, like, where I need to be to, like, be in my groove. And, like, that's what, like, normal life looks like. I think, like, people like me forget that, like, every day isn't an adrenaline rush. And, like, every day isn't, like, you know, let me see what I can do to just feel. No, like, sometimes it's just being happy, like, in the moment, doing the simple shit that, like, sometimes we don't feel like doing. And I just remind myself to, like, be grateful for those things. It's really hard sometimes to forget about what it was like 10 months ago. And, like, I have to stop and remind myself that, like, I was on the streets, like, in Tampa, pregnant, drunk. It wasn't a good look. And I felt pretty shitty, and I really didn't care if I lived or I died. So like when I wake up today and I have a list of tasks that I might not feel like doing, I kind of remind myself that like I have an opportunity to do those things, and like I don't ever have to live the way that I used to ever again. So with that, I think I'm gonna stop. That's it, thank you.